Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us. We welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, December the 19th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It's a delight to be here. We're honored. We're blessed to have each of you join us every day that you join us to extend and to understand these ideas of first century Aramaic forgiveness and the corollary tools that tie in with it. We are today is designed to be Aramaic Fridays, but I heard from Dale's wife this morning, and she shared with us that Dale is in a major healing crisis, and so being in a major healing crisis, he's going to be resting through this show and taking care of himself and breathing, so that he can move through and get to the next level of what he's ready to get to the next level of. And so I'll just ask everybody to join for a moment as we hold Dale in our hearts and in our blessing. From every corner of the globe that we're listening to this show, we'll focus in Asheville, North Carolina, and just send Dale our love and our care and concern as he goes through the next layer of his healing process. So this healing process is not always Dr. Feelgood. And so going back through the symptoms of healing is often a challenge. So Dale, we support you in meeting that challenge and getting to the other side of it. And beyond that, I would like to say hello to Dr. Tim. And we'll establish once we get to say hello to Dr. Tim where we're going to go with the show today. We had left the conversation open yesterday with a caller, and we'll see if that caller's online and if we're going to move in that direction or a different direction. So we'll just say, good afternoon, Dr. Tim. How do you be today, sir?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. I understood from your text that you were going to do an intro about living the Lord's Prayer as opposed to praying it, and I was looking forward to that. I also have available to read, if it fits in with your plans, the transcript that I pulled from when Dale came to speak to us at the Unity Center in Woodstock of his living translation of the Aramaic Lord's Prayer. So it may be slightly different than other versions he's done, but in the moment when he's doing a live translation, sometimes it's a slightly different wording or phrase, but it's very similar to what he has typed out or he says in his audios. And it's just an English interpretation of the Lord's Prayer that it might fit with what you're going to talk about.
Cool, awesome. Delight that you've got that. And I was having the thought that since we left that open conversation yesterday, if our caller is with us, then we might listen to our caller and see what they have to share and see where that takes us before we go into Lord's Prayer idea. I had left that invitation open, not thinking of it being Thursday yesterday and today being Aramaic Fridays. So let's check with Jeannie and see if we've got any callers.
Nobody has their hand up, so if that caller is on the switchboard, if you would press 1 so I can see your hand, and we'll get you turned on and address the continuing issue.
Okay, well, it sounds like our caller isn't there.
Well, the hand just went up.
Oh, cool. Well, let's say hello.
970, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Cindy, Brett's wife.
Well, hey there, young lady. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm out walking, so I'm stopping because I'm breathing heavily.
Okay. I can hear your inactivity there.
Yes, I'm out in a forest, a snow-covered forest. So.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I'm
so just went for a walk on a rain-covered beach. So, you know, it's a little different.
Yeah, I'm calling because I just wanted to update a few things about what's going on with it. I have purposely not called because I was waiting for Brad to call, and he did call in yesterday. Just to backtrack a little bit, Brad first called in a year ago in September. He was working with the worksheets. We were watching the videos, and he just felt like it wasn't moving what he wanted it to move. And he called in, and you and Dr. Kim talked to him, and you acknowledged that sometimes it takes additional help besides what we can get from worksheets and the videos and the radio show. So he pursued that. He pursued finding a counselor. There were no local counselors that could counsel him on his PTSD that had experience with that. And also for listeners, Brad's background is PTSD, combat Vietnam vet. His mother was Chickasaw. His father was German. And he's just got all these issues. Did not get married until he was 59. Made the decision at 23 to never have children. His childhood was abusive. And all this is makes up Brad's MO. So we decided to pursue, actually he decided to pursue the counseling, and he did eventually end up going to the vets meetings. We have a group here called Vets for Vets. And he's been attending those meetings. He's on the board, and he found a counselor who was a Vietnam vet, not a combat vet. And he's been seeing this counselor three days a week. He's been going to the Vets for Vets meeting 2 days a week. Most of the time, this is during the time when the radio show's on. The only free day he has is Thursday, which is why he was able to respond yesterday. So it's been quite an amazing journey. The work that I've done with your work has just made an incredible difference in my life and in being able to stay in this relationship, which is 3.5 years old. I am 65,
right.
Brad is 62. We're realizing it is taking a variety of approaches to help him, and it's taking all of the above, as you say. Including counseling for PTSD, and it's taking counseling for me also for PTSD.
Right.
So we are working with of the tools. We listen, we rewatch the videos every day. We watch about half an hour in the morning. And I continue to listen to the radio shows, and we listen to some of them when we can on the computer. And I'd like to say that one of the things that I'm seeing is that the difficulty Brad has with the worksheet in particular is because it appears to me that combat vets with PTSD are just really programmed to obliterate the love that they show up with for the whitewashing by the military. And Brad was drafted. This was not a choice. He went in as a CO. And that, it's like they program the love out of someone. They program you to avoid it at all costs because you can't stand there and kill people if you're feeling love and compassion. If the two don't work together. And that seems to be the core issue for Brad, is the difficulty in accessing that love. And that's such a huge process, a part of the forgiveness process. And it seems like that's the difficulty he has. I think that's why the worksheets, he can't really relate to it. And it's like he has to go back and somehow find the love for himself. He blames himself. That's the biggest thing he's working on right now, is learning to think differently about himself. In his mind, he's a killer, and he doesn't want to be that. So it's been something else.
Reed, we're with you.
It's a world that I do believe it separates people that have been made to do that from the rest of us.
That's what every cult is about.
It's so sad.
That's exactly what every cult is about doing, Cindy. That's what cults are designed to do.
And the military
is the largest cult on the planet.
It's unbelievable what they do to innocent men who are really boys.
Yep, so, they get them when they're boys, and it's insane.
I don't know where to take this conversation. I just wanted to fill you in and let you know that you are part of our life every day, and we are working on it, and we are getting there. We really are. But it's taking all these different tools, including the counselor. And the counselor, what he says, he says it differently, but it coincides exactly with what you teach about returning to love, that's what you have to do. So we're very fortunate that we found someone like that. That, sometimes it's a slightly different perspective, but it all goes back to what you teach. So that's kind of an update on where we're at.
I hear you loud and clear, Han. I'm really delighted that I happened to click in yesterday. I mean, it was just so strong to bring Brad up yesterday, and if Thursday's the only day he's got available to listen, I'm glad it happened to happen yesterday so that he was there and could push the button and say hello to us. That's awesome, and I'm delighted. And, you know, there are cultures on the planet, and you bring to mind, this is a cult. There's no question about the military cult brainwashes people in a certain way, and one of the ideas of cult leaders is brainwash people to switch power persons from whoever their natural power person was in their lives to the military agenda, and that becomes the power person. And so it's the dissolving of that, and, you know, you go back to Yeshua, and he says, how many worksheets am I going to have to do around this issue? And, you know, Yeshua's reply is 77 times 70, which is not a literal number, but there's an infinite amount of work to do. And when you add up the sources of trauma that Brad's been through, you know, the Native American, I mean, the insanity that's been done to Native Americans in this culture is just beyond belief. And then the military insanity, on top of that, it leads to the same place. You know, we had Michael Coughlin, who has shared with us on the show some of his experience and, you know, a lot of the same issues. And, you know, he's former combat vet, Navy SEAL, military trainer. He trained people. He was one of the guys who trained people to kill. And, you know, he came to Heartland this summer, and when he showed up, he was in a wheelchair. When he left, he was jogging, and he was there for about 6 weeks. And the intense immersion and the safety of getting in touch with and moving through the layers of rage that are purposely instilled to keep the game going, and being able to free oneself of that and go back to and come to that direct experience of the presence of love. There was one time period where Michael did a still point session about, oh, I don't know, maybe I think it was about week four in the summer. And Michael hardly said a word for 2 days after that, because he was in that space of connectedness and just, like, you know, I don't have anything to say. I want to stay with this awesome, sweet presence of energy that I am now experiencing. And it takes a significant amount of work to crack through and come to that experience. I remember another young man who came to Heartland back about 15 years, no more than that, 17 years ago. And he was from Sweden. We've heard from Peter on the show. And Peter had never been into military training, but if you look at the Swedish culture brainwashes or teaches people to be aloof and distant and conform. Conformity is the key. And I can remember that year, Peter coming to me, he and his family actually stayed at Heartland for 2 years on the support team. And I can remember Peter coming to me several times, and in class he'd say, Michael, you're talking about this thing called love. What are you talking about? I don't have a clue what you mean.
Right.
And along about toward the end of the first summer, we did a still point session, and Peter had the full-blown near-life experience, full-blown light. And here's this guy who's, I mean, very sweet man, just naturally a sweet guy, and but distant and aloof and very intellectual. And all of a sudden, Peter, who, you know, keeps everybody at arm's length, all of a sudden, Peter can't keep his hands off of people. He literally, I mean, I can remember this so graphically. He went from person to person to person to person in the intensive, just gripping them, grabbing them, hugging them, holding them. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. I mean, it was just awesome to watch. And so, you know, it takes a definite depth of immersion to come to that experience. And we just hold the space that what Brad needs to move through and what Brad needs to work through is, you know, his commitment and his movement, and your dedication to support him is pretty awesome. And I understand that it's not easy. I have, you know, this summer, actually it was interesting, in the first intensive Michael came to, which was a couple of years ago in Florida, and one of his rages came up, and his rage was pointed at me as the object of attention. And I'm sure that even, you know, back then in his disabled state, we could have tied his hands and feet behind his back and he could have taken me apart. And, you know, what remained for me to do as his rage came up and it was just right square in my face was to simply take step by step by step toward him, extend my arms, and hold him. And the rage melted. And so I understand how challenging it can be for you, and I acknowledge you for your courage, to be the space that goes to that place, that holds that powerful presence of love, which incidentally ties right into the Lord's Prayer that I was thinking about talking about. So we certainly hold the space and join you both in that healing process. And if there's a way for you guys to come and do an immersion kind of thing to spend a significant amount of time, I think that the space that's created by a whole group of people, you know, when you're working with a therapist, you can make some awesome progress, but there's nothing like a whole group of people moving in the same direction, each one getting a piece of the puzzle and strengthening and strengthening and holding that field of love that makes it easier for everybody else to move into that space. There's the essence of that statement from Yeshua. We talked about it yesterday, of, you know, when two or more are gathered in my name, and my name being the active presence of love, the mind he functioned out of was the mind, you know, what was called the mind of Christ, and the mind of Christ is literally the mind of love, or what in the theologies they call the mind of God. And so as more people gather in that, and, you know, Yeshua talks about a little leavening leavens the whole loaf, and I think we can safely assume he wasn't talking about bread. He was talking about when enough people are holding the space, then it becomes easier for each person to step into that space. I'm sure you've heard me tell a story about Christian the Lion, the video that's on our website, and where, you know, this lion brought up by these two young men, when they tell the preserve that they've shipped it off to, you know, a couple years later, that they're coming to visit the lion, they tell him, you know, this lion will shred you. He's wild. He's, you know, he's got a tracker on him. He's got his own pride, and you know, this lion would kill you. And so these two guys, you know, we're coming to visit our lion. And they send them out looking for this lion in the wild. You know, they have an idea where they are because they've got a tracker on him. But they send a preserve employee with a high-power rifle because they're going to have to shoot this thing. And this lion comes charging down the hill and, you know, just literally in the most friendly way mauls them, holds them, you know, just up on them, licking on them, paws around them, just, you know, just like this huge lion is hugging these two guys. And I my offering to people when they watch that video is then to watch what the female does, who's a totally wild lion. And because my take would be that because this lion, whose name is Christian, is the space of love, has no training in him, no energy in him of attack toward these guys. He is a space, and this lioness that would normally shred them to pieces, the lioness being the huntress, would normally shred these two guys. She walks up to them and allows them to pet her. You know, unheard of. I mean, ridiculous. But it is the power of a space. When two or more gathered, when a whole group of people come together, you know, if you've got a therapist, you know, Dr. Tim does awesome work with people, but, you know, if you listen to Tim when he shares it, there's a whole new level of happening when the support group comes together. So that might be another thing that you guys might want to do is, you know, maybe not necessarily the combat vets, because as Brad said, there's not a lot of interest. It's tough to track the depth of brainwash. You know, these people who have created the military cult have been doing this and practicing this, how to brainwash men into this state, for thousands of years. They're good at it. It's a tough brainwash to crack open.
Yeah.
And so, but maybe what you guys want to do is start a support group with just some local family and friends working with the tools and start to develop that space of support to move in that direction. You know, I understand that Brad gets it, and in his head he wants to do it, but the energies that are structured in his carbon-based memory, in his body, take it in another direction. And It's a huge piece of work when you look at the traumas he's got to work through.
Yeah. Well, we'll listen to this together within a couple of hours, and we look forward to hearing what else you have to say. What you're talking about the Lord's Prayer sounds very interesting. And just know that we're out here. The very fact that all of you on the radio show continue day after day to be there is very inspiring, because that's what Brad and I have to do. We need to keep doing it day after day after day.
That's what it takes.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Go ahead, Dr. Tim.
Well,
I think Tim's got a thought for you.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, you're doing it, and we appreciate that you're doing it, and that what time and energy we're committing to this is having a positive effect for you as well as for us. And I just want to say that in the 20 years or so that I've been working with a specialty in trauma and helping people from domestic and combat traumas, what I have discovered works the best is a combination of the kind of work that we talk about on this show and some kind of work with the body's energy system. Because as Michael keeps saying, there are all of these energies that have been trained into us, whether it's from our power people as parents or our power people as drill sergeants and military trainers, and all of these different energies that we've taken into us that are less than love. So some form of a therapy that utilizes the body's natural energy systems, the acupuncture meridians or the chakras or the massage or the breath work and yogas, are dramatically improving the results that people get when they utilize trauma reduction techniques. And and on Monday morning at 4 in the morning, I woke up wide awake. Now, the alarm wasn't set until 5, but I was wide awake. So my phone buzzed, and someone had sent me a link to a video to watch. And the video was titled Faster EFT. Quicker, faster, but it's the word faster. FASTER EFT, for EFT tapping.
Uh-huh.
And I watched over an hour's worth of these videos. And what I discovered is there's a gentleman who has combined some of the best of, I've been teaching people the EFT tapping and breath work for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years now. And this gentleman has combined the best of that with the best of what I've learned from Michael's worksheets and the neuroemotional technique and coherence therapy about how we rewrite traumatic memories in our brain and body's energy system. And he's combined the two in a simplified technique. So instead of the 12 or 14 points that we tap on with EFT, the emotional freedom technique, he's narrowed it down to 5 points that you tap or touch. And he emphasizes tuning into what you're physically feeling and emotionally feeling without so much being in the story.
Uh-huh.
And then combining that with words about release and letting go and canceling, just like Michael does. And the great news about this is that this gentleman created this and gives full credit to the people that he learned from, neuro-linguistic programming and EFT tapping and all these other things. And then he put dozens of videos on YouTube so people can learn this for free. And that's why and that's why I'm promoting this on Michael's show. I don't promote things that are going to send anybody any place where they're going to get hooked into a system where they have to pay money or subscribe or dozens of videos. And I have used this now probably 5 or 6 times just since Monday morning with different people, and they have had striking benefit, just like the kind of benefit they get when we do the worksheets in that supportive environment in the group. And so you might want to check into that, and at one level or another, encourage Brad. If he gets good results out of this, that's fine. But encourage him to seek to add to whatever he's doing with his current therapist some form of work that addresses the energies he's holding his body and the felt sense of that.
Yeah.
Energy techniques are very gentle. It doesn't have to be, you know, the deep massage Rolfing techniques. And so that would be my offering for you.
Thank you so much. One of the things I'm thinking of that comes to mind as you're talking is Brad appears stoic, unemotional, extremely calm, no matter what's happening, but his hands continually work. His fingers never cease moving. And I've always noticed that and felt that that was the energy in there that needs to be released. Maybe this could help with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things to do is to, when he's working with somebody, make sure that they realize that that energy moving through his fingers is the telltale sign that he's got lots and lots of emotional traumatic energy.
Yeah.
And so maybe at this level, it's not registering in his face or registering mm-hmm. through his breathing, but you can begin working with that energy at that level as the access point.
Yeah.
And, you know, he can do worksheets on the energy in his hands, and whether he mm-hmm. likes that they're constantly moving or he, you know, he feels frustrated that they're constantly moving or whatever.
Yeah. Very good.
And what I would do in that case as well would be to get Brad to actually hold his fingers still, because that's a way of dissipating the energy, and go into a still point session. And whatever that energy is that's being liberated or moved through by the movement of the fingers, what I've found in still point breathing with people is that, you know, sometimes people will start and their legs will start moving and kicking, and I'll say, stop, hold your legs still, and sometimes it takes a great deal of effort. But what happens is the energy that's being released by the physical motion then is able mm-hmm. to build up and bring something to awareness. And that
uh-huh.
stoic mind, you know, I was talking about Peter, that's basically the Swedish mind is the stoic. And that's one of the covers that keeps us out of that experience. And that's all simply a mind energy, a brainwashed mindset that just needs to be cracked open. And so that's the whole idea of the work, is to do that. And you know, you've got our support. And delighted that you guys keep in touch with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's just, it means everything.
You've got our support. We're delighted to be on the team. And, you know, next year we're probably going to be heading west, so maybe we can plan to get through Colorado.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly where the tour is going to take us, but we'll see how it unfolds.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Okay,
thank
blessings.
You, Dr. Tim. Thank you, Jeannie. Bye-bye.
Thank you, and have a Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Yeah, we hold the space for an awesome holy day. And, you know, you look at one of the things I'm going to want to talk about is the changing of the meaning of words. And you look at, we've got these holidays, as people call them, and holidays are holy days. Holidays are days where you spend time developing your wholeness, not holiness like down on your hands and knees, but rather your wholeness and your whole being. And so I just invite everybody to remember that each of these holy days is about taking the time to bring your energy into this space of wholeness, bringing this presence of love into your physiology, into your life, and into the world. That's what we need more of. So we hold the space for that.
We do have another caller.
So, Jeannie, well, let's say hello.
Okay, it is area code 203. You're on the air.
Hello, Michael. It's Mark. I spoke to you a couple weeks ago. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome. Yeah, you're loud and clear, Mark. Welcome.
Oh, good. Good. I don't know if you remember, I had had some issues, dental issues and girlfriend issues.
Right. Yes.
But I guess the reason I'm calling is I found myself yesterday very, very angry at a psychologist in just the way that psychologist was working with my former girlfriend. It was just so just made me so angry, so enabling. So I guess my question
I'll invite you to just hold your thought there for a minute and take a look at our definition of denial when I speak or think a thought that
mm-hmm.
shows that I believe that something outside of me causes something to happen inside of me, then
mm-hmm.
what's happening inside of me, which is caused by what's happening inside of me, I have to dissociate from. And so notice that when you think that it's the psychologist's behavior that makes you angry, you will cut yourself off from the ability to change that anger. And so I just
mm-hmm.
invite you to maybe rethink it just a little bit and recognize
mm-hmm.
that what the psychologist is doing with your girlfriend is showing you something that's inside of you as opposed to causing something to happen inside of you.
Yes, I can definitely see that.
You knew
the
quality of anger long before you ever heard of this psychologist, right?
Yes, and I am grateful that it's been brought up. I've done one worksheet. I guess I got to do more because it's going to take a lot maybe to dissipate. I did a lot of
breathing.
And
that kind of intensity of anger might be one of your 77 times 70 worksheet issues. And then once you dissipate the anger, then recognizing that anger is always a drug,
mm-hmm.
and to look at what is it you're drugging yourself against, what's the pain that's under the surface that you're using that drug to anesthetize. And that's where the real work will begin.
I think you lost me there. The pain that's underneath the anger.
Okay. Let's imagine that, you know, we've heard the phrase, you know, it just drove me to drink.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it was something in my life that was so painful that I couldn't mm-hmm. handle it. And I'd go and sit down and have my fifth of scotch, and then I'd be feeling no pain. So I had pain. I didn't want to feel. I drugged myself with alcohol in order not to feel it.
Right.
That makes sense? Okay.
Oh, definitely.
So anger is internally produced alcohol. Not literally alcohol, but it's an internally produced anesthetic. So anger is exactly the same as alcohol. It's an internally produced drug that keeps me from feeling what's under the surface. And it's a tough drug to break free of because, you know, the supplier's internal and it's free. You can't just say, I'm not going to the liquor store.
Right.
But what you'll find is every time something happens and anger comes up, if you can drop that anger for a moment, you'll find underneath it is something very painful that you don't want to look at, don't want to feel, and don't want to deal.
Now, when
I suspect it's probably... Go ahead.
When you say drop it for a moment, I still do a worksheet on it, or do I just try to see what feel what's under it?
Yes.
Or both?
Yes. All of the above.
I see. Now, my other question is, sometimes it seems to me that some things that a professional can do is just so harmful or irresponsible. And I know I'm not, I mean, it's still inside me, I agree, but I kind of get, I don't know how how maybe after a number of worksheets things will dissipate, but to me it'll just seem still so irresponsible. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah. What do you experience as the harm resulting from, at least what appears to you to be resulting from, this psychologist's behaviors?
Well, when you recommend to not go into the feelings and not to just go off and just forget about it and focus on career, I just think is just long-term health is just unbelievably harmful. I mean, it's just the total opposite of this work. It would almost be like somebody recommend to getting an organ removed as a, you know, it's just upsetting. But I guess I got to be grateful for that. But I don't know at this point, it's hard for me to imagine.
It's not upsetting.
Sorry?
Yeah. Notice that it's not upsetting, but you've got upset in there that it shows you.
Yes.
And once again, when I say it's upsetting, I'm now in denial. Now that I'm in denial, my internally produced energy of upset, I just dissociated from. I said to my mind, you know, that simple statement, it's upsetting, the long form of that statement, the instruction set, you know, that's kind of like a macro. And that macro says to my mind, we have a history of this quality of upset, but we don't admit that we have this history. And so I want you to build me a world of pictures that shows me that that out there is the cause of my upset, and never show me that this upset belongs to me. So now, with denial, I've successfully dissociated from that part of my mind. And now the very part of my mind that holds all this upset that I want to heal isn't mine to heal anymore, because I just said, not allowed to show it to me. So once again, when I can just shift my thought structure and my language from it's upsetting to, wow, when this happened, it brought so much upset for me. I realize that I have so much upset in me that is shown to me by this event that I'm going to go to work and begin to dissolve this upset. Now I've given my mind an instruction set that says, I have upset. Yes, this is the trigger for it, and I'm ready to look at it and move through it.
Okay. One specific worksheet question. Thank you. That really helps. But one specific worksheet question for 1A. I had put down last night when I was doing an idiot psychologist. Is it? I'm thinking it's better just to say that, not be pick such a charged term in.
That's on pretty the worksheet. Hostile. That's pretty hostile, you know. The I don't know if you're doing the latest version of the worksheet. If you go to whyagain.org, we've recently changed the worksheet, and it starts out with my name first. I, Michael, who am love, feel. And so I suggest that you might want to start with what was your name again?
Mark.
Mark, who am love, feel rage. Because to call this guy an idiot psychologist, that's a pretty intensely rage-based thought. And you know, when we say what he did, and, you know, I have no idea exactly what he's done, whether this is your perception of what he's done or her perception of what he's done or what's actually happened, it really doesn't matter. But when I hold that someone else is an idiot, I'm hiding a part of my mind with a lot of pain in it by putting that part of my mind into my brain's image of them.
I see. Okay.
So when I can stop and take a breath and look at, the rage I'm pointing at this person is legion. And realize that I'm now getting in touch with my rage, which is a very painful thing. And the root of that rage, you know, one of the things we go into in our codependence to interdependence work is looking at the fact that when we come into the world as this awesome active presence of love, and because of interaction with our power person, we think we're forced to give up that direct experience and buy into a self that's based in some form of hostility or fear, and we give up the direct physical presence of love, the rage at having done that is monumental. And to touch back into and clean up that rage is a very important aspect of the work.
I see. Okay.
And it reflects in all sorts of places, and it sounds like this is one of those places. But I go back to an earlier question that I had asked here, and that is to look at what was it that you felt you lost when this person counseled your girlfriend the way that he did?
Well, I just, I felt I just care for her and just didn't want to see her hurt. So I just feel like it's leading down the road of, you know, poor health and just disaster, because it's going the opposite of this kind of work. So
if you would be precise with the goal you had for him, what would you have wanted to see him do in that circumstance with your girlfriend?
Encourage her to feel her feelings.
So what happens if you cancel your need for him to encourage her to feel her feelings? What comes up for you? Just do that. Just for a moment. Just, you know, focus on your brain's image of that psychologist. And then I cancel my need for him to counsel her in a way that I think is right and feel her feeling. Cancel your need for that.
Well, I feel like I kind of lose control of being able to, you know, I guess protect her. I mean, that's what it feels like when I let go of that, that I have no control anymore.
Okay. So then this is what we call a Hydra worksheet then. So that would be one worksheet, too, the one we just talked about, where you've got a goal for him. So now I would suggest you start making yourself the object of attention in the worksheet. And you look at, number one, your need to control, and cancel your need to control. And number two, your need to protect, and cancel your need to protect. So if you think about, you know, here I am in a space with my girlfriend, and I want to protect her, and I have all this rage at what appears to be at the psychologist for the way he's counseling her. If in that circumstance I cancel my need, just go inside, I cancel my need to protect her, what comes up for you?
Fear. I would say fear of what might happen to her.
What would you like to see happen for her?
To heal and to prevent illness and heal emotionally, prevent illness, heal physically.
So then the goal would be to have your girlfriend heal. So what happens if you do the worksheet where your girlfriend now is the object of attention and I want her to heal? And you cancel the need for your girlfriend to heal, what comes up?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is just that I need to accept what is. I mean, maybe that's just what popped into my head. That's
Mm-hmm.
If I cancel that need, I have to accept what is in the moment.
Right. And if you think about accepting what is there a time in your life, you know, if you go back through your life, are there any other situations or events where you felt like you just had to accept what was and there was pain involved?
Yeah, my whole childhood.
Can you back to the first time you felt that? Or thought that?
Well, I can go back to the earliest time I remember. There's a lot I don't remember, but yeah, I can.
What was happening?
I was on a car trip, and I couldn't deal with my parents yelling and screaming at me anymore. And I just, when they stopped, I just ran into the forest and didn't want to come back.
Mm. And in that circumstance, when your parents caught up with you or you finally came out of the forest, whatever happened, was there a message that you got from them?
I don't
remember?
Know, but a message I got from them?
Yeah, do you remember what happened when you reconnected with them after running into the forest?
I didn't really. I was just numb for the rest of my childhood.
So you didn't feel?
Yeah, I just stuck it out for another 6-7 years until I could get the hell out of there.
So notice that it ties right back into the issue with your girlfriend. And you stopped feeling, and now there's rage at the psychologist who, it sounds like at least perceptually, the message he gave her was she should stop feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how's that tie together?
Well, it seems like, I'm definitely trying to do the work and feeling, but it seems like it's still
sure.
coming up in my life externally.
Right. Well, and it's always a reflection. You know, the world brings to us the circumstances. It will show us what we need to look at. So what if you went back, remember that day in the car, parents are yelling and screaming, and you shut off your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
If you imagine, Mark, going back to that moment and giving yourself permission to feel, what would you be feeling?
I think sadness and fear, but mostly just loss, hopelessness, I guess, and sadness.
So is it possible that you developed a belief system from that early experience that if you didn't have control,
mm-hmm.
then there was going to be trouble?
Control of situations, you mean, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel hopeless. If I could just get back in control, then everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, and the other part maybe is also if I felt at all, if I could just numb everything out, then it was going to be okay.
So notice you gave exactly the message to yourself that you're saying this psychologist gave to your girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. So I can see how it ties together, but is there something other than, and these are Hydra worksheets, and I agree, but is there something else I'm missing there that you're pointing out as far as tying together, something else that you're suggesting I do?
I would suggest that you go back and you start doing worksheets around that day in the car and the helplessness and
mm-hmm.
the numbing out. And I would
mm-hmm.
say that is going to bear huge fruit to you. And that's probably more what the rage is about than the psychologist and the girlfriend. And it's quite possible that the message even is a message that didn't even come from the psychologist, but rather came from what was triggered in you. I don't know. Of course, I have no access to, mm-hmm. to the experience there. But
right,
it's possible
right.
that that message that you heard her receiving
mm-hmm.
may be simply a reflection of this message you gave yourself. Everything will be okay if you don't feel, if you just go numb. And in that is the rage and the pain of loss
mm-hmm.
of relationship with parents, relationship with self. What age were you then? Do you remember?
I think I was around 11 or 12.
11 or 12, yeah. So they're probably still, if you do some worksheets around that, you'll probably find, because usually that kind of a dynamic has happened a lot earlier than 11 or 12. And the 11
yeah,
or 12-year-old memory would be simply a reflection.
I know it. I'm pretty sure it has, but for some reason I must have blocked off a lot of earlier memories.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's any, I guess the way to get them back is just keep doing the work.
All of the above, that's it. And when you're at the vitality level that you can recapture the energy dynamics of that experience, whether it was the full experience of that age of 11 or 12, or when it happened when you were 7, or when it happened when you were 2, you know,
mm-hmm.
if the depth of energetic trauma involved in that, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, let's say today in your life you're at a level 5 vitality.
Mm-hmm.
If the depth and the impact of that trauma of the 2-year-old was an 8, then you're not going to be able to recapture that in full and throw it out until you build your vitality beyond a 5, beyond a 6, beyond a 7, beyond an 8. And when you hit a level 8 vitality, that's when that whole experience is going to crack open full blown.
And in order to build up to that vitality, other than, you know, healthy eating, et cetera?
All of the above. You know, that's why, for instance, in an intensive, we do a total fresh and raw dietary regimen. That's mm-hmm. the power of, you know, and if you don't have a support group, I'd support you creating one, because that's mm-hmm. the power. You know, if I have a level 5 vitality and we create a support group and you have it and Tim comes to it and he's got a 7 and Jeannie comes to it and she's got an 8, then all of us are uplifted in our vitality level, and in that increased vitality, we can process things that otherwise we wouldn't be able to process on our own. That's one of the reasons for and the importance we stress on having support, having a support group to continue to work with the tools.
I see. Okay, so I'll work at it from that end as well, building up the vitality. So
the dietary regimen, all of that, it all ties together. Where are you located?
Connecticut. For the moment, I'll probably be in New Hampshire back in, you know, because we broke up, I'll probably move back to New Hampshire in a month or two.
Well, we hold the space, and I hope, and our time is running low, so I'll just say that I hope you'll keep us posted on what's uncovering, how can we support you, and we're just delighted that you called.
Okay, Michael, thank you very much, and thank Jeannie, too, and Dr. Tim and everybody. Thank you.
Okay. Blessings, Mark.
Okay.
Have an awesome holy day. So we're down to the last few seconds. We didn't get near the Lord's Prayer, so I guess we'll wait till Monday to do that, or maybe Tuesday, or it'll come. And in the meantime, we're delighted that you've joined us, and we appreciate you. We hold the space that as family starts to come together over these holy days, you remember to breathe, you remember to forgive, and have the best year yet of your eternal life. Bring a stranger to the show on Monday. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the Internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.